On today's College Football Inquirer, the national title game matchup is set. It will be Miami versus Indiana. How'd they get there? Miami with a dramatic win in the Fiesta Bowl. Indiana with a blowout win in the Peach Bowl. We'll talk about these two teams, how they built it, how they got there. Also, transfer portal madness continues. You've got people saying they're going to go in and not going in. You've got Trinidad Chambliss at Ole Miss being denied another year of eligibility, and his lawyer saying, well, here's how we're going to do this, because they're going to try to fight it. There is so much going on in the world of college football. We break it all down on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. I'm in Atlanta. Ross is in parts unknown. He was at the Fiesta Bowl. You saw a good game. I saw a terrible game. But we got a national title game matchup, gentlemen. It is Miami and Indiana, just like everyone drew it up in the preseason.
Yeah. Just like we all thought, right? The one seed and the 10 seed meeting for the first team in a way, I guess, and then the last team into the field and playing in, storylines abound, right? Playing in Miami's, obviously, home stadium, Mario Cristobal from Miami, all that whole story, Miami, you know, resurrection, the U back. And then, of course, you got an Indiana team that has a quarterback, a Heisman Trophy winner from Miami originally, whose dad played high school football with Mario Cristobal at Columbus High.
Columbus, right? That's right.
I think, yep. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, and then the whole Cignetti and what has happened in Bloomington, it's going to be a really fun one.
If you got $5,000, you can go see it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Indiana fans are going to outnumber Miami fans in their own stadium. The ticket prices tell you that. I was at the Peach Bowl last night, walked at it. I knew, like, my entire hotel was Indiana fans. I met one really nice Oregon fan on Thursday night, and he's like, I get it. We're outnumbered. I've never seen a team be outnumbered at a neutral site like this. It was an Indiana home game. It was 90-10, and given the price of the tickets, I'm guessing it is a massive Indiana group headed to South Florida.
90-10.
It really was. Here's how I can attest to that. And I wasn't even there. So I live in Nashville. So that's I-24 to 75. And if you're coming from Indiana down 65, you're going to cut through Louisville. Yesterday morning, promised my sons, once in a blue moon, we go to Waffle House. You get up early enough, you get dressed, we're going to go to Waffle House. Our Waffle House in West Nashville, next to Vanderbilt. I forgot to text you guys. I walked in and I thought the game was being played there. I walked into a Waffle House in Nashville, Tennessee, and it was filled with Indiana gear. And just walked in and I was like the record scratched. Yeah. And I was like, what's going on? They're like, oh, this is a hat. You know, we left after work yesterday. This is the halfway point. I started talking to all these people. It was, even from a state away where I'm at, and then to see it on television, I texted a couple people who were in the press box last night. I don't know, Andy, I feel like you may have the most experience among us. Have you ever seen such a lopsided turnout? Because, you know, never. Indiana's a couple states away from Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. I've never seen it like that. And it sounded like an Indiana home game. It is probably louder than an Indiana home game. Because the way Indiana Stadium is built is not to keep the sound in. What I'm curious about is it louder than when the Falcons are really good? One of their home games. I'm guessing it is because NFL crowds.
We don't have a data point on that, Andy.
I know. I was walking you into that, Falcons fan, Stephen Godfrey. But nice. it was incredible because, and Dante Moore actually addressed this after the game, saying that they thought they could have the verbal cadence. They had to go silent because it was too loud. It was like being in a really raucous road environment for them.
So one more question on this. Andy, I know you've done a lot of Hurricanes games. I know, Ross, we've all covered the Hurricanes in Miami. They have a reputation. It's very far from campus. Miami's very spread out. Normally, I think the last time I was there, they were playing Nebraska. Normally, it's a little tepid inside of Hard Rock, unless it's like an FSU home game. And that's sort of understandable. I'm not knocking Miami. What do you actually think the ratio will be? Because this is a game that, on the other side, Miami's waited 20 plus years for this.
Yeah.
I think it'll be 50. Really close split. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, really? Right around 50-50. I think it'll be really close. I was there for the Notre Dame game, And I think I said this on the pod, actually. Somebody who had covered Miami for a long, long time walked over to me pregame, like right before kickoff, and said they thought it was the best atmosphere they had seen in like 20 years inside of Hard Rock Stadium. And I remember thinking, and it was a good atmosphere, it was, but I remember thinking, wow, you know, like that's pretty wild. And so you're right, Godfrey, there's that sort of reputation with Miami. So I would be surprised if it's not, yeah. I mean, maybe 60-40 Miami was the highest you would go or something, maybe. Yeah. But it seems like Indiana's going to bring it. And it's not surprising, man. Like, and I think Cignetti has said it, and Scott Dolson, the athletic director, said it a lot there. Indiana, I think, has the second largest or the largest living alumni, 600,000 people in America.
Yeah, I believe it's the largest. And that's the, like these old line Big Ten schools, I don't think people who root for teams in other leagues understand. These are massive schools, huge enrollments in big states that have been operating for a lot longer than your school probably has. And what that produces is these huge alumni bases. Now, you see it writ large with Ohio State and Michigan. When Michigan State's good, you see it. But like, we've never seen Indiana be good, so we didn't know what it was like when it was activated. And holy crap, these people are very passionate.
Yeah.
I think my friends at Homefield Apparel have pointed this out before, because they're all IU grads. And by the way, they're just on the moon right now. If you go to Chicago, St. Louis, any major Midwestern city, Indiana is the first, second, or third largest alumni base in every Midwestern city of registered alumni who like go to events and stuff. Again, this is probably just our football ignorance. Did you guys hear Reese Davis on the pregame show making the joke about the fan runs into the elevator and he's asking, "Hey, Reese, what are you going to do before tip off?" And Reese is like, "It's kickoff." Like there's, you know, like there's Reese, still a little
Reese
bit of
Reese had to have been workshopping that one. I will say,
you can tell he was happy about that. Yeah,
the candy stripe pants being just all over Atlanta. Yeah. That's my favorite piece of college football. Well, it's not college football; it's college basketball. But of college sports clothing, I think is the Indiana candy stripe pants.
Yeah,
I've done a couple home games there, and when the student section is active, it really is like a cool sight from the, you know, from the press box or from far away. So, yeah, we were talking a lot about parity on the last show, or like five shows leading up to this. We talked about the new age of college football.
Talking about parity, Godfrey. Don't you know Mark Cuban is now donating to Indiana?
Yeah.
They're now the problem in college football.
Yeah.
They have a billionaire funding them, and poor schools like Oregon that don't. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
In Miami.
Y'all. Right. We did a whole segment on the last show about how there's so much parity in this Final Four. And you know what, boys? There is. Because I think any combination of Oregon, Miami, and Ole Miss, I think you would get something you would get a one score game in all those permutations.
Yeah,
but Indiana is something completely different now, and I think we might be witnessing a coronation next week when we're all down there.
I just keep being blown away. I was watching the game last night with somebody, and you know, it was whatever 35-7 or whatever it was in like the third quarter, second quarter, and he looked over at me and was like, "I can't believe what I'm watching." And I feel like that everybody has that sort of view when you're in the middle of watching Indiana football blow the doors off of another school. But
guys,
it's happened a lot.
Indiana's better. Indiana's better than these teams.
At everything.
This is not a cute little story.
Right.
Yeah.
Andy last night, like they're better at literally everything. Passing, running, stopping the run, passing the ball, special teams, like everything they are so good
at. Every single thing.
So Anthony Broom, who works at the Wolverine, which is On3's Michigan site, he posted this before the game, and I thought it was really interesting. He went on Pro Football Focus, and he looked at how many top 200 draft prospects each of the remaining teams had. At this point, Indiana hadn't played Oregon yet. And so Oregon had a few. Miami had a few. Indiana had the most. Mm. Indiana has the most NFL players right now on its roster of these teams. Now, if you want to say Miami has some young guys that will be NFL players, fine. Indiana. Like Charlie Becker's going to be an NFL player. Malachi Toney's going to be an NFL player for Miami. Like they're not draft eligible yet. But this team is just as good on the field. Now, Ross, I want to ask you this because you covered this team very closely, and I obviously covered a bunch of this team's games. How do we think Indiana stacks up to, say, 2019 LSU? Because that was a different era. That was, yes, you got Joe Burrow as a transfer, but he was a grad transfer. The undergrads couldn't move around. This was still you have to sit out a year if you transfer. Mm-hmm. So it was still, what can you get out of high school? And I think probably you can't build a team that deep anymore. But this Indiana team is threatening to do what, in terms of just beating the crap out of everybody, what that team did.
Yeah, last night was like the first time I feel like I saw a lot more comparisons just to those two teams. When I think about LSU's 2019 team, all I think about is Burrow and the offense, right? Like the receivers. Like all I think about, even though the whole team was good, this team, Indiana team, I don't just think about Mendoza and Surratt and all the other receivers. I think about the whole damn team. I mean, look what they did on defense last night against Oregon. So I guess I don't want to say that the Indiana team is better from like top to bottom as a team overall, but that's just how I sort of feel is like I just think of it, the LSU team, a little differently, I guess. I don't know.
I was having a conversation with my Phantom Island co-host, Ryan Nanny, and it was after the Fiesta Bowl before last night. And we talked about like, what's the most unsexy way to prognosticate the national title game? You know, all those tackles that Ole Miss missed against Miami on those longer drives? Yeah. Indiana's not going to do that. If you're looking for just a simple difference in the game, Indiana's not going to miss assignments and tackles on defense. They're going to, I think they're going to win this game. I don't know what the margin will be, but I'm tempted to say anything lower than like 21 based off of the last couple weeks. Indiana's going to win this in the most fundamental and unsexy way possible, honestly.
Somebody asked Kurt Cignetti on Thursday in the joint coaches press conference, where both coaches were getting a little tired of the questions by the end, but somebody asked for the keys to the game. So they only asked for two keys to the game, and Cignetti gave the entire list. And he's like, we just do this every game. This is what we talk about. And it's, you know, it's run the ball, affect the quarterback. Special teams have to be special, win the turnover battle. It's all stuff that every football team talks about. And he said, here's what we talk about every practice, every single game. And you saw it completely play out against Oregon. You saw it completely play out against Alabama. Like they do it to perfection every time. And I was asking, you know, Carter Smith, their left tackle, and Pat Coogan, their center. I swear I talked to people who weren't offensive linemen. Daniel Ndukwe, who had the strip sack last night. How do you guys do this? How do you maintain that edge, that level of seeking perfection every single day? Because that's the hardest thing for teams to do. Everybody's up and down, especially when you're 18 to 22. Like, everybody's up. I guess 18 to 24 nowadays, but everybody's up and down. These guys are never up and down. They are up here every single day.
And they don't. One of the things that, like, I think Indiana, the team sticks out to me is that, and I hate to go to this because it's just kind of cliche, but they really don't like beat themselves at all, right? And they remind you of, again, it's just easy to go back to, and it's sort of always something we say, but it does remind me of the Saban teams, the dominance they have, and how they don't beat themselves. It just reminds me, of it. So I don't know if that's just me picking a really easy thing, but That's exactly what it looks like, Ross.
It is.
They have the best turnover margin in the country, right? I think they lead the country in turnover margin. I was looking up the stat. They have gained, total gain 29, total lost 8. it's unbelievable. And then in penalties, they're probably not. I was going to look at the penalties, but they don't hurt themselves when it comes to penalty. Number two in the country in penalty yards a game. I mean, look at that. Unbelievable.
Miami, other end of the spectrum.
Not so much. Yes.
Other end of the spectrum. That might come into play.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ross, the game you were at, Miami and Ole Miss. Miami, I've never seen a team dominate 2.5 quarters of football so thoroughly and only be up a point.
Yeah, typical though, right? I mean, like, we've seen Miami. I mean, I'm just thinking about some of the other games Miami played this year, and even the ones they won, and they just sort of can't put the nail in the coffin. And yeah, it was one of the better fourth quarters of a football game I've ever seen, as far as like the punches back and forth from Trinidad Chambliss, right, and India, and Carson Beck. In the last drive that Miami had, 15 plays, 75 yards, two or three third down conversions, and then Beck's touchdown run was one of the most sort of just electric, really fun drives of football to win a huge game that I've seen in a while. And that's what gives me, Godfrey, a little hope that this is going to be a game in a week and a half, is that you've got a really seasoned veteran quarterback with weapons that are, you know, some of the most talented players in the country. And so that's and two defensive linemen that can pressure the quarterback in ways that maybe Indiana hasn't seen this year. I mean, they have played Ohio State. And look at that game, right? Miami beat Ohio State.
Right.
Indiana barely beat Miami, Ohio State. I look at that game and think maybe this will be a little tighter of a competition. Miami's playing at home. I mean, you know. I'm thinking all these variables will mount up to a
They both
game.
Beat Ohio State in the same fashion, by the way, with the same game plan. Miami's first two games, they did it without asking too much of Carson Beck. They didn't want him putting the ball in danger, and so he didn't. And they squeezed the life out of you defensively. They ran the ball down your throat. They could not do that against Ole Miss because they were dropping interceptions. They were committing penalties. They needed Carson Beck to come through for them. He missed some throws, but he also made some really good throws down the stretch. There were some third down laser beams. Obviously, you had the scramble for the touchdown at the end. Carson Beck is going to have to play the game of his life for Miami in this game.
I don't see that happening. Culturally, we've talked about the Mario Cristobal, kind of like the brain fart of the bad decision making. It looked like on that last Ole Miss touchdown drive where Chambliss found Odom, it kind of felt like if Ole Miss were to come back as dominant as Miami was in that first half, it would have been more of a system-wide failure with the penalties, with the inability to create just one of those turnovers would probably have driven it in, and then Miami could have gone down and scored. Some of the play calling, I think you could probably criticize, although they did run the ball effectively towards the end. It is funny.
It was just flea flicker. That's the only one.
It's not designed. It wasn't designed, Andy, because clearly it was a called pass play, and then Beck just saw the middle of the field wide open and ran. That's what Georgia could have done to win the Sugar Bowl. They just run their quarterback one more time. Ole Miss was gassed. That was another part of it, too, is I think that the cumulative effect and what saved Miami from being the victim of all the self-inflicted wounds was the fact that Ole Miss's defense was just completely out of gas there towards the end.
Yeah.
When I compare this to Indiana, though, Ross, it kind of scares me a little bit because there's a team on the other side in the Hoosiers who are going to make you pay, or at least we've seen make you pay for every single mistake you make or every opportunity you do not take. So it's very, very simple stuff. You want to talk about interceptions? Look at how last night started, right? Mm-hmm. Oregon's best drive of the night was it's technically their second drive, but it was the first drive where they could string a couple plays together. And essentially, you have to assume that was their first 15. Indiana
that
adjusted
was the, script,
the rest of the night. Yeah, the rest of it was kind of a moot point.
That felt so hard, too. Like, you know, that was a long drive, and it felt like every inch, and then Indiana just goes right down the field, and then Indiana just goes right down the field again, and then Indiana, you know, it's like Oregon works so hard for this one drive, and it just, but you're right, that was a good response by Oregon and the best of their best of the
Well, when Oregon scores that touchdown, and then Indiana immediately drives down the field, and that's when you had the really great Surratt catch on the sideline on third down. By the way, shout out Elijah Surratt,
getting
started PI'd. His career at St. Francis, PA. Like he didn't even start at James Madison. He started at St. Francis, PA, and they got recruited to James Madison out of the portal. But his nickname is Waffle House because he's always open. And he had the great night in the land of Waffle House, in the hometown of Waffle House.
That's the key. Like honestly, I know I feel like I'm saying this putting a cap on the season, but like a lot of people can portal. Identifying and developing talent after the portal is what Indiana seems to be ahead on. One quick thing. We talked about like Miami needs the game of its life. It needs a talent-based game because that's how Miami wins games. Reuben Bain wasn't really a factor against Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Well, that's Trinidad Chambliss and Charlie Weiss Jr. Mm-hmm. That's
right.
Yeah. That's a quarterback who gets the ball out quick and an offensive coordinator who recognized that has to be the game plan, which Mike Shanahan and Fernando Mendoza can also do.
This is where I'm headed, is that I certainly am not going to say anything Chambliss can do, Mendoza can do, because I think it's comparing two wildly different, let's say, vehicles, if you will. But you had to think Indiana was taking notes, because Ole Miss, I think, is a less talented, certainly a less well-coached, although I really like what Pete did down the stretch. For Indiana to be mistake-free and as competent as they are, they had to notice the way that someone like Bain was neutralized. I mean, yeah, it's... And then also, I'm kind of nitpicking here as I go through. You know, Ole Miss was only in this game in the first half because of one blown defensive call.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. The Kawan Lacy run is just because Miami's out of alignment and he pops through the hole. Like, this is the kind of stuff Indiana will murder you for.
Right.
Like, this is the kind of stuff that makes it 28-0 in the first quarter.
Yeah. Well, I think back to that Notre Dame game, Miami down there, and it just felt like Miami should have won that game by 2+ touchdowns, and at the end they had a chance to lose the game. It just, that's what they do. And that is scary against Indiana. Having sort of giving teams like Miami has all year a window to get back into the game despite dominating is certainly a concern going in.
But there is a path, and that's the thing. If you look at Miami's roster, there is a plausible way Miami can win this game. And I'm not sure there's a lot of other teams you could say that about if they were playing Indiana.
Would love to see it. I mean, I'll be there, so I don't want to cover a blowout. I mean, I would love to see something exceptional happen. I would love to see, I love the coordinator work from Miami this year. Schematically, they've been great. I would like to point out one more time, imagine this defensive overhaul of 2025 and the quarterback Miami had in 2024. That's the national title game I want to see against Indiana.
Mm.
Well, imagine they take the quarterback out of the portal who went to the same high school as Mario Cristobal.
Yeah,
his dad played with Mario.
Gonna be a storyline.
That's right. Yeah.
Miami did recruit him. Like, let's not pretend they didn't recruit him. Miami did recruit him. He made his decision. Georgia recruited him too. Georgia wanted Fernando Mendoza bad, but he ended up going to Indiana because he liked Mike Shanahan, he liked Kurt Cignetti, he liked what they did. He felt like they could develop him there and that he could become a high draft pick. And guess what? He's going to be a Las Vegas Raider.
On that, Andy, out of high school in Miami, I don't know that Miami recruited him, though, right?
Yeah,
from what I understand, maybe it was a walk-on,
discussions
over a walk-on spot, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, he had to go all the way across the country. So yeah, a lot of angles here. Another angle, Corey Heatherman, Miami's defensive coordinator, knows all of the Indiana staff and probably knows all their calls and their, you know, everything else that goes along with it, as he was with them for 3 years at JMU, and still very close to all those guys, both coordinators and Cignetti.
Yeah, that's amazing. And that's going to be... It's one of those things that I think, you know, those of us who cover this closely know, but that's going to be a big storyline this week, is how much DNA that those defenses share.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, let's call it, like, we're in like a establishment of narrative going into the national title week. There's one thing that could have happened had Oregon won, and that would have been the inevitable comparison to the coaching change, where Mario leaves Oregon, goes to his alma mater, goes home, and then Oregon's left again with another coach that walks out, and they get Dan Lanning. I don't think this is a referendum on Mario made the right decision. I think that's too simple of a concept. But I do think about Oregon.
It wasn't a right decision. Mario was going home.
That's
his alma mater. Yeah.
But
there was no decision
to
make.
But if you're an Oregon fan, there was something else to that people forget about. His mother was dying. And she was like on her deathbed.
Yeah.
And he went home to be with her every day before she died. And that spring,
he would
later that spring.
Ross, I'm glad you brought that up, because it became one of the sort of like more unseemly moments I've ever experienced in coach gossip or the coaching circles, which was he was zipping down to Miami as often as he could from Eugene to see his mother. And every time he did it, it was taken as, oh, he's meeting with Miami boosters. He's doing, you know, it's Miami this, Miami that. if I'm an Oregon fan,
right,
it feels impossible to process as we record this the day after the game, because you've now been blown out two playoffs in a row by, I think, the eventual national champion in both. They're both from your league. And the knock against Oregon is that they've always been a step away from national championship caliber. As much has changed, Andy, at Oregon that we've talked about, the line play is now, I would say, a five-star line like caliber compared to when they were running the blur, right? We've talked about that, right. How bigger they, how yeah. much bigger they are, how much more Big Ten they are. They still do feel a measure away. Although I'm hesitant to criticize a culture issue, a coaching issue. They just got the doors blown off of them by circumstance in the playoff by two teams that were just infinitely better and also happened to be from their league.
Right. They need to have the best team and it running at optimum capacity, which they haven't had yet. And they were close last year with that roster. Then they then filled some holes, but then created some new ones. Dan Lanning has to build a more complete roster. And, you know, we can say, oh, he took all this from Kirby Smart. Well, none of what he learned from Kirby Smart actually applies anymore. He's got to do it in this era. And so they're still good. They're still going to be there every year. He's got to have that one right mix that comes together. And I think it will. I said on my On Three show last night, I think he'll win a national title in the next 5 years. You can't keep getting back and not eventually break through. So we'll see on that. But I can't wait. We're all going to be in Miami for the game. So we will discuss it much further as we get closer to the game. We got to talk about some of this other craziness that is going on in the sport. It all seems to, once again, revolve around Lane Kiffin. But we've got Trinidad Chambliss denied his eligibility. We've got the Damon Williams situation at Washington. We'll talk about all of those things on the College Football Inquirer when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and before we get to the Trinidad Chambliss eligibility situation, we gotta pause and recognize one of our own. Oh yeah. Mr. Ross Dellinger, the National Sports Media Association's Sports Writer of the Year. National Sports Writer of the Year. This is not College Football Sports Writer of the Year. This is not.
I didn't approve this to be talked about on the pod.
It's called a side, side text. It's called a side text, honey.
You guys.
We would have had a cake if we were in person. We would have like the biggest sheet cake you ever saw.
Well, you know what? But when we're all in Miami together, you could buy me one of those good bourbon drinks.
You could have. Oh, we could have a public sheet cake. I think to Ross recognize your achievements. Yes,
I think I think Ross's sheet cake.
Don't threaten me with a
Ross's
good time.
Sheet cake would be made entirely of bourbon. Yeah, I think the sheet cake you want. Yeah, there you go. A bottle.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Seriously, congratulations, Ross. As someone who has read you forever and has gotten to work with you on multiple occasions, there's nobody who deserves it more. There's nobody who works harder. And I am just so proud of everything you've done because you earned this completely.
Thanks, Dad. And I should call you my dad.
I'm just disappointed, Ross.
Few people probably know, but when I was a little old beat writer covering LSU, the only way I was able to get up to the national level was a certain Sports Illustrated reporter at the national level who told his boss, hey, you should hire this Ross Dellinger. And of course, that person was a Mr. Andy Staples.
He doesn't like to talk about it. I'm like Cignetti. I can evaluate.
He doesn't like to talk about it, but when you make the show, Andy Staples is the chaperone. He's the one, he's the older brother. And none of us would be doing this if it was not for his completely, it's kindness that doesn't happen in other beats and other sports. So, but seriously,
Andy,
Ross,
we're talking about you like
your
ass off.
Like he's dead.
We're talking about you like you're the old man. Yeah, you're like this 75-year-old, old
I kind
man.
Of am, you know, Andy.
Good luck on your retirement, buddy.
Yeah. Good segue to...
Please bring my gold watch and I'll bring your sheet cake.
Oh, good. You will do that. Good segue to over to what we were talking about, which ties into the LSU Tigers, my old stomping grounds of beat writer coverage. Well, what else? Go ahead, Andy.
Let's go to Lane Kiffin's old school first. Let's so we go back to Ole Miss. So the Ole Miss football team is flying home from Arizona after suffering a very, you know, soul-crushing loss. And the news breaks that Trinidad Chambliss has been denied his request for another year of eligibility, which we expected because he was asking basically just, hey, give me one more year. I'd like another year, because he had a redshirt year at Ferris State. He then played 3 years at Ferris State. He then played 1 year at Ole Miss. That's the standard amount. But this is 2026 in college football. Ross, Trinidad Chambliss has not done fighting.
No, not at all. As maybe a month ago or 3 weeks ago or so, he got connected to Tom Mars. How he got connected to Tom Mars is an interesting story. The LSU football coach, a Mr. Lane Kiffin, called Tom Mars to encourage him to represent another Trinidad Chambliss, a quarterback at another school. So that happened.
That's so altruistic of Lane Kiffin. I can't believe he did that. What a kind gesture.
Yes. So Tom Mars, as we all know, fights with the NCAA quite a bit and has a lot of success. And I would guess that Andy, as you note in his statement, I know he will be filing some kind of lawsuit to get that 6 year back with the circuit court and probably the state of Mississippi. And yes, they have damages, real damages, right? He signed, and part of the reason probably he signed earlier this week.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think the signing of the contract and the timing of him agreeing to a contract with Ole Miss was intentional. They wanted it to happen before the NCAA ruling.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And those are more than 5 million reasons to get a judge to grant this. So
Tom Mars is like the sign of health for an industry. And I've spoken with Tom, so it's going to sound a particular way. But the more Tom Mars shows up, probably the less healthy your industry is. I find it funny that, like, he's come full circle because he sort of exploded on the national scene in the Houston Nutt Ole Miss saga. And do you remember Shea Patterson, the quarterback that was going to go to Michigan after the sanctions? Right. And so he kind of battered Ole Miss initially. Then he went to work for the NCAA for a while. Then he was just sort of the at-large hire for these type of issues. Basically, the more you see Tom Mars, the less healthy the NCAA in college football is as a sport. That's not a knock on him, but the ability to come through and jump sides like this means that there's an intense amount of gray area in the legislature here. And I was not shocked, by the way, about the Chambliss ruling at all.
No, I wasn't shocked either. Now, the Mars strategy in this case, as he pointed out in his statement, that the key word is Mississippi judiciary. He wants this in state court. He does not want this in federal court. Which is interesting because everybody else who sued the NCAA has sued them in federal court on antitrust grounds, which in cases involving how much you can pay athletes, the NCAA has lost every one. But in eligibility cases, as Ross Dellinger has pointed out multiple times on this show, the NCAA is batting about 500 and maybe even a little more than that. The judges have been pretty sympathetic to the idea of having non-infinite eligibility in college sports.
Hey, so Andy, guess where they won't bat 500?
There you go.
In the state courts of Mississippi, baby.
Right, yeah. And that is why if this lawsuit gets filed, which I assume it will, there will not be any antitrust claims because that could get the case removed to federal court. There will be nothing in it that could possibly get the case removed to federal court. It will be in state court, and it'll be intentional interference with a valid contract. A very simple legal concept, like a first few weeks of law school kind of situation. And what they want, what you're trying to do in this case, is you want the preliminary injunction. You want the judge to say, we think you might prevail on the merits of your case. Therefore, we will, I think the legal term is enjoin the NCAA from enforcing its eligibility rules on you while this particular case is being adjudicated. That they don't have to finish off the case. They just need to run out the clock.
Yes. There are a lot of bored and excited lawyers in the state of Mississippi who might hold a particular affiliation for the university in question, who are also, let's just say they hold in recent memory the NCAA's last punitive action against Ole Miss, which rather than punish Hugh Freeze, punished the university and the players. And so there is a fresh amount of zeal in the legal community of the Magnolia State, and I see Ross nodding because he's familiar with these individuals. They would love to put one on the board against the NCAA. These two institutions don't like each other at all.
Yeah.
The University of Mississippi and the NCAA.
They have to be quick here. One of the Trinidad's agent told me last week about the situation they're in. Because look, I mean, he could get drafted, right? The draft. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a late second round sort of grade. If you know, the worst, a third round selection. And so they need to figure out, you know, they're going to get this injunction granted before he maybe starts full time in the spring semester. He might just have to start, you know, school because this thing could drag out. But I would guess next week at some point, Tom Mars, and then we'll file this. But yeah, this was anything but surprising, the ruling. The NCAA had already told Ole Miss, I think early, mid-December, that they didn't provide enough medical documentation for this situation. And I think as recently as a couple weeks ago, the NCAA was trying to get more documentation from Ferris State, and there wasn't anything else, you know, to be had.
Right. They were saying something about enlarged tonsils, you know, in 2022.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter was he was on the bench in 2022. They didn't play him in any games in 2022. It wasn't really because of an injury situation. It was because that's where he was on the depth chart. So
yeah,
that's the situation. And it's very similar to the Zakai Ziegler case. Zakai Ziegler was the Tennessee point guard who played 4 years in four at Tennessee. He's like, I would like to play another year in college. And then he sued, and that was in federal court. And the judge is like, nah, no, can't do that.
And that, Andy, and that's a good point about the federal state court, because in federal court, I believe the latest numbers, it's around, just give a round figure of 40 eligibility lawsuits filed for athletes trying to get an extra year or years of eligibility. In the NCAA, as far as the preliminary rulings, have won 25-ish of the 40. Yeah. So they're winning a decent amount of these. But well, like this
Diego
one, as
Pavia,
you mentioned,
won for a very specific reason. Diego Pavia won an extra year because the NCAA was treating people who were in JUCO in 2020 differently than they treated people who were at NCAA schools in 2020. So there was a very clear reason for the court to say, well, why don't you just treat these people the same? There's no clear reason with the other cases. It's just people saying, I would like another year because I can make some more money doing this. And
it feels like if he keeps it in Mississippi, if he keeps it in state court, he's got probably a puncher's chance here. Otherwise, if they can drag this out, which is probably going to be their best strategy, then it doesn't feel like it's going to happen. This is also compounded by, I don't know if this is a sign of Ole Miss's confidence in Mars. Again, weird statement. But you see that they're in the race for DJ Lagway now.
Is a case of DJ Lagway, right? was maybe going to Baylor and maybe would like a little higher profile situation. And so Deuce Knight, the former blue chip recruit out of Mississippi who was initially going to sign with Notre Dame, he flips to Auburn before signing day. He spends his freshman year at Auburn. He's in the portal now. He's visiting Ole Miss right now. The way I see it from talking to people is that Deuce Knight is the insurance policy in case Trinidad can't play. Deuce Knight, they view as a more developmental pick. They would love to have Trinidad one more year and then have Deuce behind him. DJ, I think what his people are positioning is, hey, if Trinidad can't come back, you may want to just have a person like DJ who you can play right away. So
yeah,
we'll see. The market for DJ Lagway has not been as robust as I think the
DJ Lagway thought
around him thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
So,
but this puts Ole Miss at just such a tough position, right? The portal is closing in what, 5 days, 6 days, and you don't know if your quarterback, who might be he's probably going to be a top three Heisman sort of favorite going into next year, is eligible or not. It's a tough spot. I was talking to some of the Ole Miss recruiting guys at the game in Phoenix, and they were talking about how this was the night of the game, and they were on the field pregame, and they were talking about how when they get home from the game, recruits are going to be waiting for them when they get there for visits. And that's, again, part of the calendar stuff that I think on the last pod we discussed needs to be changed.
Yep.
Look, Ole Miss wouldn't be Ole Miss right now if there wasn't something that was completely national headline grabbing and incredibly adversarial that no one's experienced before. That's been like the motto of the program for the last, 50 days?
Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate them keeping it interesting for us. Mm-hmm. Now we have to move. When we come back, we're going to talk about Ole Miss's old coach and how he figures into almost all of the quarterback dominoes in the transfer portal right
Houston
now, or at least it feels like. Not Houston, not this time.
Got it.
No, we had Tom Mars as the Houstonite connection last time. No, how does Lane Kiffin figure into all of this? And where are some of these quarterbacks going to land? We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and guys, it feels like a month since all this stuff happened, and it's been 2 days. The Damon Williams, Washington, I'm entering the portal, I'm not entering the portal. Sam Levitt being on an official visit to LSU, sitting at a basketball game with Lane Kiffin, the famous photo from The Advocate of Sam Levitt looking at his phone and Lane Kiffin looking like, "What you looking at, Sam?" When the Damon Williams news broke, Levitt then visiting Tennessee. He's apparently now going to go to Miami. LSU doesn't have a quarterback yet. Husan Longstreet, the former blue chip recruit at USC, has now entered the transfer portal. Guys, it is it's getting messy.
A lot going on. Yeah, a lot going on. Let's take the Damon Williams stuff first, because
yes,
I think that one is really, really interesting. So Damon wants to leave, probably intends to go to LSU. I think that was all by all indications. And Washington made it very clear to him that they were not going to let him out of the contract that he signed 3 days before he decided to enter the portal. And the contract is a template Big Ten revenue share contract that all the Big Ten schools use. And there's not a lot of holes in it, from what I understand. They have made sure to go to great lengths, the Big Ten, to assure that it would stand up in this exact situation. And lo and behold, it did. And it did exactly how it's incentivized to do, how it was built to do, which is de-incentivize another school to take a player under contract. And that's part of the house settlement rules, where you have a buyout right in the contract. And in his buyout, I don't think it was it actually said what the buyout was in the contract, but Washington was going to ask for the value of the
annual
contract,
salary,
$4 million. Yeah, it's $4 million. So not only would LSU or another school, whoever was recruiting him, have to pay more than at least $4 million, probably, to get him away, but then they would take a cap hit the next year of that amount, which was $4 million.
Cap hit.
So you're talking about cap hit. You're about $8 to $10 million for a player.
Yeah, Ross, you and I were on the same page that day, because I was asking ADs. I was like, this counts against your rev share total, right? The buyout.
Yeah,
and they're like, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And here's the other piece of this. So I will point out that Damon Williams has an agent, or had an agent, Doug Hendrickson, who helped him negotiate the deal with Washington. Doug is also Jed Fish's agent, the Washington coach's agent. That Doug apparently was not aware that there was all this other stuff going on in the background. Doug fired Damon Williams as a client on Thursday, and so didn't know that all this was going on. The part that I'm sure Damon Williams was and his team were probably surprised by were, oh yeah, so even if the school you want to go to pays your buyout and is willing to take the cap hit, you do realize you will be taxed upon the full amount of your salary and the buyout. So let's say he'd gone to LSU for $5 million or some other school for $5 million.
Yeah.
They had paid Washington the $4 million buyout. Damon Williams would have been taxed for the 2026 tax year on $9 million, even though he only got $5 million of it. And oh God, that would have been a terrible, terrible April 15th, 2027 for him.
Not only that, Andy, throw in the torturous interference. They had evidence of that from, again, another school, presumably. And so there's that too on top. So there's just a lot going on. And that's part of the reason he ended up hiring Darren Heitner. Damon Williams did. And Darren, in I think the Washington officials spent most of that day on, God, when was that? Thursday. Thursday, going back and forth on all of this stuff that we're talking about now. And I think Darren brought it to Damon and said, here are your options. Here are the risks. And just going to tell you, just giving you this information. And Damon obviously went back to Jed Fish and said, you know, I think I'm just going to stay.
My dad.
Which, there, I'll be honest, guys, champagne bottles being sort of popped across College Sports Administration oh my goodness, the system worked. This is how we envisioned the contract working. Yeah.
Yeah, Ross, we have chicken-littled a lot. Actually, we shouldn't say that because I think we've been dead on. Maybe Cassandra, right? I'm thinking of mythology here. Hmm. We've nailed a lot of things, a lot of coming storms that people have either refused to address in college sports. We've talked about how, like, all the institutions, God knows I've bagged on the NCAA enough, so's Andy. Based on your reporting and your firsthand knowledge, Ross, is this not the first sign of some sensibility in the new age? Like the rules worked and we avoided a controversy for once?
Absolutely. You know,
it's not the college sports rules that work. It's the laws of the United States, the laws of these individual states, which basic contract law worked.
Which, Andy,
guess what? It always has.
Because it works, because contracts work, because we're in the legal system and not the NCAA. And this guy's an employee, more or less. And these aren't NCAA rules, right?
Yeah. There are two things at play here. There's how the house settlement rules that they would, with this injunction of the settlement that they did, that was the buyout provision and all that stuff. And then obviously, the actual revenue share contract. Now, something interesting is this situation is a little different than maybe some others that might unfold, because this was a template revenue share contract from the Big Ten. And I don't think any other school has all of their members using the same contract, with their conference sort of supporting them behind them in every way, with the contract and the contract law and all that stuff. So yeah, the Big Ten has handled things a little differently.
I don't know how to break this to you guys, but the system is working out pretty well.
These guys like to copy and paste.
They do.
Like,
well, I'll never forget getting the copies of the Big 12 and the ACC grant of rights agreements. And you realize that one was just copied and pasted off the other.
Copied after another. Yeah. That's right.
Man, I tell you what, that sign, Ross, to me, the fact that there's a little bit of alignment laterally with the Big Ten membership, that's a sign of health for the Big Ten. I know there are other issues at play in the future, but like, Andy, this is what you taught us as young reporters, right? Mike's Live had unilateral buy-in and they were stronger as a unit. This is a good sign if you're a Big Ten fan, I think.
And there's two things, too, with the Big Ten. It's not just the template rev share document that they all sort of are using, but also the Big Ten is paying their athletes through rev share from the league distribution, from the league office. They're taking it out of distribution, which is unlike anybody else too. So they've sort of centralized all of this, which I think in the end is going to be a good idea.
They're setting up being the payer so that when the athletes are employees, they're employees of the Big Ten and not individual state institution. What a crazy concept.
Andy, you said it. You said it. Yes, sir.
I wonder who that would benefit.
That would benefit everybody because you could collectively bargain with them.
Wait, what? You can't do that. This isn't labor. This is amateur athletics, sir.
They're paying for the NIL, Andy, not the performance, remember.
That's right.
Oh, I
endorsements,
forgot.
Andy.
Producer TJ with a great question, though. And this is something that we can talk about contracts and everything else. Damon Williams has to go back and face his teammates. By the way, the other piece of this is that he dropped that news when most of the Washington football team was at a celebration of life for a
bad
recently deceased Washington athlete. Yeah. It was
bad.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. And now he has to go back. And look, I've had readers say, well, I mean, all these guys just chase the bag. They understand. They don't all do that, one.
No.
And there will have to be some fences mended here.
Yeah.
Culture's a real thing.
Of how Jed is going to handle that on the team. I mean, that's a situation where you would think, right, DeMond's going to get up in front of the entire team and he better deliver a I am sorry, guys.
Yeah. It's going to happen. Right, well, that's a show, not tell apology. Like, culture's a real thing. We beat it to death in the media, but internally, you got to trust your quarterback, and damn, he's got some work to do.
So I will say, though, and we've talked about how old I am now, and I'm celebrating my 25th anniversary in July. And if there's anything I've learned in 25 years of marriage, I messed up and I'm sorry goes a lot farther than anybody realizes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, apologize by default. That's free marriage advice, by the way. I got 15 years over here. Start with I'm sorry. You'll be amazed at what happens.
So that's wrapped up. But LSU is still without a quarterback, a QB1 for 2026. And let us not forget that Sam Leavitt, the former Arizona State quarterback, was on campus when all this stuff happened. He then goes to Tennessee, where he has so much fun, he extends it by a day. But he's still going to go to Miami. Sam is from suburban Portland. I would imagine if we get a Dante Moore NFL decision, which I would imagine leans toward the NFL, and he if he leaves for the NFL, that he's probably going to want to check out Oregon too. So what happens there?
Yeah, this is a bizarre situation. Not only is Lane Kiffin back in Knoxville to recruit Sam Leavitt, but he's he, of course, can't help himself. And he's taking pictures at the Knoxville airport, and he's taking pictures of, like, Tennessee memorabilia. And I mean, it's just like he's just... He is trolling. He is trolling.
It's almost like he needs attention. It's almost like attention is just oxygen for Lane.
Godfrey needs a quarterback.
It's amazing.
Well, and let's go back. Yeah, but he doesn't need to be doing half that shit that he's doing. He's doing that to make sure that he can stay in the conversation, which he feels like contributes.
Yeah.
Right. But he feels like that contributes to recruitment. I'm not going to say he's crazy like a fox, but I'm just saying his insanity and his sort of like reality star mentality is something that he ascribes to his recruiting success. So him turning it into a circus, he thinks can somehow help win Leavitt back over. Now,
he's an any
whether
news
or not that
is good news guy.
Yes,
any news is good news. And including maybe news from me earlier this week that has now sparked a College Sports Commission investigation is the LSU and many other schools, it should be clear, and it was in the story, it was clear in the story, many, many, many other schools are doing this too. They are using multimedia rights. And we've talked about it on the show. This is not a surprise. They're using multimedia rights and corporate sponsors to redirect or at least raise new corporate money to direct to the roster instead of to the athletic department. And earlier this week, in the battle, in the recruiting battle between Texas Tech and LSU for Brennan Soresby, that Texas Tech eventually won, LSU proposed a $3.5 million NIL deal through its multimedia rights company, Playfly, and its other corporate sponsors to Soresby. Now, that was just the NIL portion, right? There's probably one or two plus million more in ref share, and there's this combined package. And this is what schools at the biggest brands are doing. You get this guarantee from NIL, from the corporate sponsors, and you get this from us through rev share. And they're combining this. Well, the CSC has, who had the contract, you know, this contract was getting out pretty good, the Soresby NIL contract, which is why I eventually was forced, felt like I was forced into publicizing and not saving it until I got other contracts, because it was getting out pretty good because of the size of the contract and just how it was written. Well, the College Sports Commission has basically said, you can't, well, schools can never guarantee NIL third party, but now third parties are guaranteeing NIL
third party money. Yeah, good luck, CSC, telling Raising Cane's what it can and can't pay.
Yeah,
to a player, here's what the College Sports Commission wants, or Adidas. Yeah.
And this gets really complicated, but here, Andy, is what the College Sports Commission wants. This document that LSU put out there was basically, it was Playfly using a marketing agency, NIL, LSU Max, and that marketing agency saying, Brennan Soresby, we will guarantee you $3.5 million in corporate sponsors. Now, we don't have those yet. Right.
But we're going to
have any contracts. Yeah. We're guaranteeing. Here's the document. We're guaranteeing you that what the College Sports Commission wants is, hey, Brendan Soresby, here's all your individual contracts that amount up to $3.5 million. And here's each contract with each corporate sponsor. That's what the College Sports Commission wants. If you're going to guarantee it, you got to have it all broken down, and you got to have the money, like the cash in the deal on hand. And that's what schools aren't doing. And we're about to see some investigations, and it'll be curious to see if we see after investigations enforcement.
I don't know that that's going to change much of this part of it, because I think the schools are going to have to work harder, but they'll get that.
Yeah, they'll get it. They'll just change the way they're doing it.
They'll just okay, this sponsor is going to give you this much money, and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, Andy, let's be honest. This has been happening, right? Schools have been changing the way they pay players over the year, right? Think about 5 years ago, it was brown bag under the table still, right? Then it was NIL collective pay. Then it was a change to this rev share kind of motto. And now they're going to have to change again. They just keep changing, and they're going to keep finding loopholes.
Ross, it was 3.5 was the total, right?
3.5 was the total NIL. NIL guaranteed portion.
Okay, but we still don't know what the total of the deal offered was.
We don't know. I'm going to assume, based on what Texas Tech is paying, which is at least $5 million, that he was going to be promised at least $1.5 million through rev share from LSU.
So you think they were about equal?
I think they were competitive. Yeah, I think they were competitive. Well, think about it. LSU's not going to guarantee $3.5 million in NIL in zero, right, for rev share. There's going to be some rev share component,
right,
to get probably close to that offer. I think most schools I've talked to are doing a 3-1. Or I'm sorry, not 3-1, 3-2. 3 NIL, okay. 2 rev share. That's a lot of schools are doing for big players, right? For big, high name players that they can get corporate sponsors on board with. And look, I know a lot of people are listening to this saying, like, Brendan Sorsby, there's no way he's worth $3.5 million. Like, look at pro rosters. They don't get all this marketing, all these. Here's the thing. If you are the LSU football quarterback in South Louisiana, there's going to be enough corporate sponsors that want a piece of you in some way. Yeah. So off the bat, there's going to be $1 million probably worth of deals from like Raising Cane's or Our Lady of the Lake Hospital or whatever. There's going to be enough down there to get to. I knew that would probably inside a chuckle.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to be professional. No, just Google it. We don't have time.
The biggest corporate sponsor that LSU has. Yes, hospital.
Okay.
Hospital,
well, sure is. Sure is. Go Tigers.
Hey, listen, former University of Florida president Bernie Matchin, one of the wisest people I ever met. He always told me, take care of the docs and the jocks, often at the same time. So
look, Miami,
UM Health. Yeah, exactly.
Miami is not in a national championship game probably without UM Health.
Just try not to pull money out of the hospital where like children are to then funnel back to that. Anyways, go Tigers. Louisiana, number one. I can't question the Sorsby thing anymore financially. I was asking just kind of curiosity, like I'm curious if the structure of the deals, of the offers between Tech and LSU had any bearing on his decision-making. The football part, I just want to point out real fast. Yeah. Fernando Mendoza versus Carson Beck, national title game. Stop questioning what's happening in the transfer portal with quarterbacks. Like we can't rebuke his value anymore because of what we're seeing on the field. But Ross, do you think the structure had anything to do with this?
Just because you know somebody better than Brendan Sorsby because you didn't watch any Cincinnati games, like, you didn't know Fernando Mendoza last year either because you weren't watching Cal games.
Repeat the question, Godfrey. What were you asking?
Did the structure of the deals? Did the way the money was structured have any effect on the decision to go to Lubbock?
I don't know the particulars, but I don't think the Texas Tech deal was based all just around this multimedia rights contract. I know that the Texas Tech deal, at least the NIL portion, that an apparel brand, Adidas, was significantly involved.
Adidas has been doing this for years. They just now can do it the way they should have been doing it all along.
Maybe. Yeah.
Basketball
maybe,
writers
right?
are laughing I think at us right now.
We're going to see College Sports Commission give some scrutiny to some of the apparel deals, and that's going to be interesting too this spring.
And maybe if they try to run afoul of Adidas or Nike, they're going to realize that's not a very bright
idea.
That's
not a good idea.
Be in court, just like everything else in college sports.
Yeah,
That's the only undefeated team, folks.
You know who doesn't want the apparel companies to lose? The schools.
Only undefeated team in college sports is billable hours, folks. No, I was asking Ross because there's a little bit of a narrative being built by some national media, probably at the behest of certain agents and ADs and et cetera, talking about, like, I am of the belief Texas Tech is successful in doing what they're doing because they're spending their way to it, which, by the way, go with God. I think that's fantastic. What Texas Tech seems to be doing from a PR standpoint now is massaging that and saying, well, the facilities are great and the culture is great. I ain't buying that. I'm not saying that the facilities aren't great. I've seen the little drone fly through like everybody else has.
Their facilities are, it's unbelievable. But
that's great. I get what you're saying. Fantastic. Yeah. You know what? There's like Hawaiian wood in the Oregon meeting room.
Can I just raise my hand here?
Yeah. It's
the
money.
It doesn't matter if it's money or some other reason. Who cares? Most people, when they take a new job, take it because they're getting more money.
Well,
it's normal.
But Andy, this is...
Get over it.
Yeah.
I'm telling tech fans, especially the ones like harassing media, saying like, "Oh, you guys focus on is the money."
Got this from Miami fans and Oregon fans too.
Yes, that's our job to do that. We're focusing on the money because, by the way, you're Texas Tech. You were a perennial 7-win team for 30 years. Okay, so your ascension is your money, and that's fine. I'm totally fine with it. Spend, baby. But let's not get into this BS now where I'm seeing stuff on ESPN where like, I mean, the facilities are fantastic. Everybody loves the culture. No, dude, you're paying somebody to go to Lubbock, Texas. And that's fine. That's business.
Guys, I joined On3 and Yahoo, my various jobs.
For the culture.
Because of the family atmosphere. That's
you just you got here.
I love it. Yes,
it felt like home. It felt like home.
Well, I'm glad. I hope this pod feels like home to you guys. And thank you so much for listening. We got more coming. We will talk to you again on Tuesday.